Welcome back to Rude Dude.
Welcome to the Rude Dude Recovery Podcast with your host and resident wet brains, Cam and Hen, two dudes navigating the waves of wellness. Thanks for being here. This week, the dudes sit down with Jeff Spikes, a team and culture developer who's been sober longer than they've been alive. Jeff shares about what makes each of us unique, better ways of talking to ourselves, scarcity and abundance, and a unique take on boundaries. Ladies, stick around because he may even help you get rid of those unsolicited Richie Pitchies. Please enjoy Season 2, Episode 7 of the Rude Dude Call. I'm ringing down. Welcome back to the Rude Podcast, the show that puts some pep in your step, takes some weight off your plate, and reminds you, haters gonna hate, and you are loved. We are your favorite recovering alcoholics, Cameron the Cree Davis, and your pal Henny Lokes the Lobster, Henry. Cameron, how are you, my friend?
Well, I was sitting there just wondering. I was like, dude, he's freestyling here. I was like, this is a little wild. He starts with a Henry Cameron. So yeah, dude, starting it off with a different twist. I'm doing all right today, bro. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I had a good day. I had major late 30s wins today, man. I got a Sam's Club card. I got a Sam's Club credit card. And the savings that I was achieving in Sam's Club, I was like way too hyped about it. So that's how old I am now.
Dude, there are small wins like that when we're on our way to becoming geriatrics. I definitely enjoy my Costco card. I hate going there because of what it does to my bank account. But getting one of those adult cards and things like that, look at you getting all frisky with the credit card too. You better watch your ass, dude.
Dude, the interest rate was incredible though.
I'll be the judge of that.
20% for a credit card.
Yeah.
That's good.
Is it?
A lot of them are 27, dude.
I know, dude. I know. I'm fucking with you. We're not getting into that.
Well, we have a very special guest today. We have another guest who is going to bring the heat. Another expert, if you will. This guy is a team and culture developer. He started off kind of like our buddy Paul, not doing that. And then he realized where the need was and what he was good at and kind of shifted into a position where he helps other businesses and companies improve whatever it is they need to improve. So I'm going to let him tell you because he's going to tell you better than me. So let's welcome Jeff Spikes.
What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's good to be here.
Welcome, man. Yeah, thank you. So explain to our listeners a little bit better than I just did what you do and a little bit about your background.
Well, I prepped in my mind for that thinking learning about me may not be the best use of time for anybody, but I'm also complying, right? But yeah.
Well, just quick.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I don't think I'm the most important person in the room or especially with your listeners, right? I think that's the most important thing, but to give some point of reference of where I'm coming from, right? Uh-huh. You know, I grew up in a way where I found myself adapting rather than being my natural self. And I wasn't necessarily given the space or room to be me as I see it today, right? Of who I am. So I did a lot of things, and I used to call. I'm a coach. I'm a certified through the ICF, and I only got that a number of years ago. Like in the last 10 years, I think I finally got that certification. And when I did, I already qualified for the PCC level of coaching, so which was a lot more hours than the entry level ACC. But I had already been doing it for so many years, and I called it coaching sideways, right? And I would be a culture developer and a team developer in every company I ever worked in, but I was a truck driver. I started a few companies, and then I got into supply chain, and then I got into facilities. I had a life moment of, I love people. Why aren't I doing something with people? And I love coffee, so I went to work for Starbucks, right? And had to go back to being an assistant manager, and who cares? I'm going to do it, you know? That's what I wanted. And anyway, I became a facility manager, and I started thinking, I don't want to do the norm, man. I don't like it. And so that's what really made the shift. I took this assessment called Clifton Strengths, and it started talking about what I was great at. And I thought, that's ridiculous. like, that's nuts. That's not who I am. But turns out it turned out being a really relevant conversation. And I started just being me more. And then over the years that turned into me being more and more me. And at some point I just said, I'm just going to do what I do and stop trying to do all these other things. And so that's kind of where I'm at.
I love that. I think a lot of us would do better to just be ourselves. And that's kind of one of the things I talk about here on here a lot, is one of the greatest gifts I've received from sobriety is the ability to be comfortable being myself. Before we get to that, though, could you tell us a little bit more about the Clifton Strengths? Because I noticed that in some of your bios and stuff, and I'm trying to understand what that is.
So Clifton Strengths is owned by the Gallup organization. And there's some history to that we don't have to get into, but the Clifton Strengths is the longest standing, most scientifically backed and studied strengths model or assessment that someone can take in today's world. It started back in the 50s with Clifton was the name of the man. And then it was at Woodrow Wilson School. And so was Gallup at the same time. And I don't know, do you guys know what Woodrow Wilson School is? Have you heard of it?
I haven't.
So it's a postgraduate school that's attached to Princeton. So, okay. Some of the greatest minds have been there.
Never a big deal.
And the strengths model is still studied at Harvard and Stanford and other places. So Jim Clifton wanted to learn what made successful people successful, right? So this is in the 50s. I can't tell you much about the 50s. There had been this, the Industrial Revolution, all these things. A lot of people had reached this epic status of success, right? Ford, and like you can just stack all those up. And he wanted to know what made it work. And weird thing, you know, the way that they tell the story now is that, you know, he couldn't find anything they had in common other than that they leveraged their strengths. Each person that was highly successful knew what they were great at. So that in the 70s, I guess, turned into more of an assessment that became more substantial as it was studied. And now it's an assessment that it's the least threatening personal assessment you can take because it has nothing to do with your personality. You could attach it to your personality if you so choose, then say, wow, that's really me, but it's not. It's about ways we show up to try and get something done. You know, I was averse to it at first because I didn't like the results. I had fixed everything broken about me, which did turn out to be the bottom strengths in that list. And I was very determined that I had fixed that, damn it. But, you know, it's become quite a life because it's, you know, that whole idea of no one can be a better version of you than you. And there is something amazing about how you show up that's different from how other people show up. So quick, we're better than one in a million. The science proves that to have the same top five themes, strength themes, in the same order is a 1 to 1.33 million that it'll be the same as someone else.
I listened to your episode on what's unique about you, and you talked about that. And that is very interesting. And I love the point of a self-love, and because that's kind of how you twisted it. And you were talking about like choosing how you speak to yourself, because you are very unique, and there's no one like you. And I think what's funny about what you said too is you didn't find the results to be the things that you thought of as your strengths. I think that's interesting. And I think a lot of us do misjudge ourselves and think that we're better at something that maybe we're not so good at. And we forget about something that we might be better at.
So I have a quick question. What was the most illuminating part of that assessment that you found out about yourself? Like what was one of those strengths that you just kind of were just like, hey, that just doesn't seem right. But then lo and behold, after you did some soul search and you found out that, hey, it really was who you are.
My number one was belief.
Oh, I like that.
I was flabbergasted. I didn't. I was like, what the heck am I going to do with that?
Go join a church or something, man. I mean, you figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and some people like to think that these results should tell you what you can do. And they certainly can help create some kind of ideation around what might be good to do, but they really don't. The reality of the science is you can aim yourself towards anything. And if you're doing it through your best self, you can get what you want. Right. So, but yeah, so I had gone in the Marine Corps at 17 after having this really visceral, intense, out loud conversation with the mirror where I said, you're going to go somewhere where they kick you hard enough. You're going to get kicked in the ass hard enough and long enough to learn discipline. And I'm like, and I, the next morning I joined the Marine Corps, dropped out of high school.
Wow.
And I got a DUI between that and going in. And they said, we're not taking you until you graduate high school. And so I had to finish high school before I went in, but I went in and I fixed discipline.
Yeah.
And focus. I was, so I thought they should be number one and two. Right. But the reality was that I, the way I learned to be disciplined, and this speaks back to what you were asking about how I speak to myself, is I learned how to be disciplined by talking to myself like a drill instructor. And that done too long can become like a inner form of Tourette's. So if, you know, with all the committee in my mind, if I have a doctor or psychologist in my mind, they're saying, you have Tourette's, you know, because I'm constantly going, shithead, dickhead, you know, I'm just calling myself names all the time. And
I don't think we want to promote that as the best kind of self-talk.
No, it doesn't work. Well, so I ended up having having daughters, right? Well, I didn't have them, but, you know.
Yeah.
I contributed. And the beautiful daughters and my wife at the time. And if I was busy being disciplined and focused, if I was really dialed in on something and they interrupted me, I'd yell at them like a drill instructor. Mm-hmm. And they'd be scared of me and hurt. I'm like, I don't want that. Right. Mm-hmm. So these things kind of converged all at once and, or over a few years. And it was like, I started leaning into that belief and my other strengths. And it was like, you know, if I go through my strengths, and by the way, no one in my life could have told you back then that I'm disciplined and focused because I was always fighting with it and struggling with it, right? Mm-hmm. But as I started shifting how I focused on it, well, what I did and got developed a belief system, like started with why it's important I do these things. Mm-hmm. Then when I'd be sitting there focusing on something that was important to me and I'd strategized on how to get that done, they could interrupt me and I'm totally chill. I'm like, yeah, what's up? You know, what do you need? What can I do? What, you know, what do you want? And, you know, and then people said, dude, you're the most disciplined person I've ever met. Mm-hmm. How could those be low on the thing? You say you're going to do something, you do it, you know, all that stuff. And I'm like, oh, because I accessed doing that through the best part of myself instead of trying to pretend like that was my way of being where I was actually miserable. Right. So, but I was comfortable being miserable. Right. I grew up learning to be miserable and still succeed and survive. So that was kind of, you know, so it's like, man, there's this growth thing that happens.
There's something to that with the belief too. And when it comes into kind of discipline and staying hyper-focused, right? Like if you're hyper-focused and disciplined on something, you intrinsically have a belief that you're going to be able to accomplish that task, right? Like those, I feel like those three kind of are married at the hip. So it makes sense that that would be your number one, man. So Marine Corps, man, Semper Fi, that's good, man. Every Marine I've met is a hard ass. So hats off to you and thank you for your service. Did you do any active duty service or anything like that while you were in?
I did.
Okay. Nice.
I did 3 years and did a couple
tours.
Couple of little things, you know, nothing major.
Nice.
Well, you can't talk about it. There's no clearance yet. It's top. he killed Saddam Hussein, but we're not talking about it. All right. But what I'm interested in, you did mention that addiction was part of your story. So what got you to the point that you said in the mirror, hey, you son of a bitch, we need to go to the Marine Corps because you're messing up.
You know, nothing's like it is on TV, right? But I've been through some pretty heavy stuff. And I, you know, now I'll tell you something. I share the stories of this stuff in very closed arenas, right?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons for that, I'm a very open book, but one of the reasons is we don't want to traumatize people with our trauma story, right? So, but I had been through a lot of abuse growing up from about 6 to 12. I had this consistent thing going on. And then I was trying to get back at the world and I ended up kind of in the middle of a form of a sex trafficking ring. And which I escaped, and I didn't really know who I was in that and how it was. I just knew that I could get free drugs if I went to this house, and I was all about that. And I knew that they were up to things that in my mind meant it was good that they were ones I was getting taking stuff from, because they in my mind were related to the people who hurt me as a kid. So I was like, those things connected. So I'm going to get back at these people and I'm going to do what I want. So it was like this at a very young age, I was already working on how do I fix this stuff, man? How do I change this stuff in my life? Mm-hmm. And my way of doing it was that, and it didn't work. So I was escaping that situation. I ended up not escaping it. And I turned into being an informant. Like I didn't really be an informant. I ended up, my dad ended up taking me down and we ended up talking to the sheriff in the sheriff's department. And my dad happened to know the sheriff. So it was, and like told him everything I knew, which was a lot. And they did a sting and took him out of business. But
amen to that.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was, I look back on that and you know, there's more to the story for sure, but it's just, have you guys heard of the ACEs? It's a test you can take. It's like 10 questions you can ask. It's 10 questions about your childhood prior to being 18. The way I tend to talk about trauma anymore, as far as story goes, because I think the reason for the story is to be relatable to somebody in a way of helping them feel not so alone.
Yep,
absolutely.
But I've learned that no matter where we are on the scale of 0 through 10 or 1 through 10, if we've had any form of that trauma as a kid, we all have the same feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like, I had it worse than you or better than you, or yeah. It's like, so I'm like a 7. I'm a 7 in that score. I was sitting in a room doing that test and this woman, Emily, who I wish I could plug her right now with her last name and everything, is a genius. Was sitting there doing this ACEs thing and talking about how she dealt with trauma. And I was finally not so attached to the story, because if you tried to take the story away from me, I thought it invalidated me.
Mm.
Like, don't take the story of crap I've come through and tell me it's not, that it doesn't matter. Cause that's the mountain I climbed. And I'd be offended. Right. And feel threatened by it. So I'd finally moved past that. And of course, we don't know now. We didn't know then what we know now about how to help people through trauma. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ways 30 years ago to deal with trauma was, let's reinvigorate it, right? Let's expose ourselves to the remembrance and the history and relive it. And it's like, so it was reinvigorating. And it's like, man, we don't have to do that anymore. So, the idea of if you have a 1 on the scale or a 7 on the scale, we're all the same. We all feel invalidated in some way. We all have reactions. We all are somewhat adapted. We're all feeling and experiencing very similar stuff. And it doesn't matter where we are on scale. And even to the point of if you have secondary trauma where you experienced it through someone else. So, and then it was this mind-blowing experience in this deal with Emily that some people were actually 0s. And someone sitting next to me was like, I never considered that somebody would be a 0 and never experience trauma. Like there's people who have never had trauma, you know, in that realm, in that childhood realm that were protected, loved, cared for.
Like, I don't even really believe that.
It's wild, right?
There's got to be some kind of like parental invalidation, something.
Like we saw dad walk by naked or something. Like there's got to be there's something hidden in there that they don't remember. They suppress that memory for sure.
You'd think, right? But I don't know. I learned, you know, part of me turned at that point and was like, I wonder what I could learn from you.
Yeah.
Like, what if I could learn how to treat myself without, you know, my little kid inside. I go through this process where, you know, I do some parts work and some other things. And it's like, what, you know, I have a place in my heart that's a room that, you know, my kid has built and can, you know, created and whatever. And he's safe there. Right. But I didn't always have that. And it's, I don't know. It gets into this whole thing of what could I learn at some point that talking to that kid, it's like, what kind of body would we have if we hadn't had the trauma? So what if we start walking more and go to the gym? And I used to weigh 300 pounds. It's like, and so that's done, right? Cause we were like, hey, we could do something different. And, there's all kinds of stuff. It's just, but it's learning how to take care of ourselves differently and learning how to, it's our relationship to all these things that had happened. But I'm with you that it seems unbelievable. But then I was able to turn that to maybe I could learn how to talk to myself and treat myself without the connections and attachments to those things, right? Whether they remember it or believe it or have suppressed it or not, right? Because they're living in a realm of treating themselves well without seeming to have all the same problems. I'm like, what?
I love that you said too that no matter what someone's trauma is, it's not a competition, right? And one of the ways I learned this lesson was with my ex. I work construction, so I'm out like doing manual labor, and I would come home at night and I'd be like, man, I'm tired. And she'd be like, yeah, I'm tired too. And I'd be like, you're not tired. You don't know what tired is. And I forget if it was her or a combination of people who are like, hey, buddy, she's allowed to be fucking tired. Like she can legitimately be tired too. It's a different kind of tired maybe, but like anybody can be tired. You don't have to, oh, I'm more tireder than you because I did more stuff. It's like, it's not a competition. And it's the same way with trauma. And you made me think your lizard brain as a child doesn't know the difference between, you know, whether you were just called fat or stupid or you experienced something much more drastic. It's still kind of the same effect on your brain. So I do like that. And something that you said in another one of your episodes that I listened to that I thought was awesome was you own the results you're experiencing and also how others are experiencing you. And this reminds me of something my dad said to me one time. It was almost one of those moments that of major change where he was like, Henry, how long are you going to blame me for your problems? Cause my dad was tough when I was a kid. He was kind of an asshole. He was really tough on me when I was a kid, and he's since changed. He's really awesome. We have a great relationship. But anyway, he said that, and of course I didn't like it at first, but the more I thought about it, you know, it's what you said, you own the results you're experiencing and also how others are experiencing you. Like, how long are you going to sit here and say, well, because this happened to me and that's why I'm the way I am. And well, something happened to me when I was 12 years. Well, motherfucker, you're 36 years old. So are you going to cry about it for the rest of your life, or are you going to do something about it? So I was kind of curious. You said you didn't like when she tried to like take your story. How did you make peace with that and kind of come to that conclusion?
Choose the insurance lab.
Are you tired of cookie cutter insurance plans that don't truly cater to your needs? The Insurance Lab is revolutionizing the insurance industry with personalized plans tailored just for you and your business. With 15 years of experience in the insurance business, including 10 years in commercial, their founder and friend of the dudes, Joey Hensler, knows all the ins and outs of the industry. Frustrated by the lack of individualized care at larger companies, he decided to start his own business. Whether you're in need of home, auto, or commercial insurance, he's got you covered. From machine shops to salons and even cannabis dispensaries, they specialize in insuring businesses of all kinds. At the Insurance Lab, you're more than just a policy number. You're a valued client. Need to speak with the owner? He's just a phone call away, ready to address any questions or concerns you may have. So if you're ready to experience the difference that personalized insurance can make, get in touch with him today at 916-957-1933 or visit the show notes for links and let the Insurance Lab give you a free customized quote today.
I appreciate the question. It was a journey, right?
Sorry, there was a lot there.
Oh, that was great. I heard, I really get it. I think, I mean, you can redirect me if I don't, but like straight up, man, a couple things happened, kind of like you're saying, like your dad said to you, right? At some point I had someone ask me, did you like all the food that your mom used to plate for you when you were a kid? And I mean, I got in trouble as a kid for putting Brussels sprouts in my pocket and dumping it in the dog's plate. And when the dog didn't eat it, I got caught. Yeah. And I looked at my mom. I'm like, well, if the dog didn't like it, they're obviously not good.
She didn't like that.
So the punishment was I had to eat on the floor with the dog for a week. For 2 weeks. And even when we had company or we went out to eat, it was like I was in the, it was like, you know, so that was like one of the
back
things.
In the good old days when you couldn't call CPS when someone made their kid eat on the floor in a restaurant.
I was just about to say, man, different times, dude. You can see the generation
prison today. Oh my God. Lord. Media
and you know, there's a saying you guys will like. If they were never right, There's no reason to prove them wrong.
Okay. Right? I do like that.
I tell my kids that if I was not right, you don't have to prove me wrong. We can just move on, right? But I stand accountable to my kids for my behavior. But
love that.
And there is a lot of stuff that's been passed down that we just now know is a bunch of hooey, right? It's like, what the hell was that? Like, you know. Anyway, but that's a whole nother story. And so it started with her being asked, like, did you like what was in? And then here's the kicker. So do you like everything that your mom used to plate for you? I'm like, well, no. You know, based on that story, no, not at all. I'm like, so why do you keep plating it for yourself?
Ooh.
Right? And I was like, oh. So then I started thinking about it. It's like, you know what? I'm treating myself the way I was taught to be treated. So how the hell did I end up picking up the torch, right? And then I'm in the situation where I feel like the victim. And I'm tired of this happening over and over and over from one person. And the same thing happening over and over, whether it's dishonesty or whatever. And then I get upset about it. And now I've crushed their soul. And I'm the terrible person. And they're a victim. So I'm now the villain. Yet I'm sitting here feeling like a victim because I lost my shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do I keep getting in this hole, right, of this happening? And so I learned about the drama triangle, right? And this, you guys know what if you're a victim, an offender, or a rescuer, you're one, you know, one of those three.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taught that if you're any one of those three, you're all.
Okay.
So if you're a victim, you're an offender and a rescuer. If you're a rescuer, you're both. Right? So you can't be in the triangle and not be all.
But I was thinking, if fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Right.
Because you're allowing yourself to be involved in this cycle.
And I always believe that I'm responsible for my own experience with the world. Right. And for me, that took the form of an overly insane sense of responsibility for everything.
Codependence.
Yeah, total. And, you know, I was taught I need to keep my mother happy. And my dad left when I was 5, and I better. And so, and then she put all the weight on me. And
were you the oldest child?
No, but I was the boy out of the, you know, so there was actually a stepbrother that was older, but just between my mom and my sister and I, it was like, you know, my sister would tell me, I'm going to make you the best guy in the whole world for any woman because you're going to learn. So it was like, you're going to make us happy or you're not going to be okay. And I was like, so I had an overly sense of responsibility for taking care of everybody else. You know what I mean?
You have to be the perfect guy from the time you're 5 years old. You have to be the perfect man.
Right. So I don't know. The other thing that happened was I finally just realized I had this experience. I was married the second time, and my wife had a bunch of surgeries and got hooked on opiates. And she's never been the same. And we're not together anymore. She was hooking me again. And we were getting ready to get into this fight. And I had talked to some people about it. I had hit this new realm of understanding of what was happening. And I just stopped and something came over me and I dropped my arms. Now I had gone through a little bit of training with Family Recovery Resources where I was learning the coaching techniques. And they have a program called Be a Loving Mirror, which is like the family, the loving path to family recovery. And I was working there. And so I'd had a lot of recent training and ideations on this stuff. And I literally looked at my wife and I just dropped my arms and my shoulders and I looked at her and I said, man, I'm terrible. I'm a complete and total failure and I'm sorry. And she was yelling at me and trying to get me to be mad. And I said, I am failing miserably at elevating and lifting you and being the man I want to be in your life and help me figure out
how to take that. Huh?
No, I was like, help me figure out how to be better. Like, help me know what to do that would be different. Cause this sucks. And so what I started to realize was that I get to be who I choose to be in any given moment. That's freedom. Mm-hmm. So if she can act, anyone can act any way they want to. I get to act how I choose to act.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started looking at the idea of, and maybe I'd already started doing this, evaluating my behavior in a vacuum. Remove the reasons I act away. right? Mm-hmm. Just as terrible as that can feel, like, right? Like,
oh. But they, it's taking yourself out of the victim role.
Don't know. You know, yeah, I felt like so much was being put on me. But when I did that, and I said, yeah, I'm not okay with being that person who loses my shit over something.
Wow. I love that.
So how do I stop doing that? Right. And it was intense, man. It's been an intense process. So it's been a stage of things that have happened, right? It's not, my skin would have peeled off if I had just gone right to that.
Yeah.
It would have hurt. It just felt, I feel like it would have burned off of me and I would have been so vulnerable, you know? Mm-hmm. So it came to me in stages of just acceptance, you know, and being, okay, this is, and a lot of help with trauma.
Yeah. I think there's a lot in there. Now I assume that the kind of quick to anger response is fairly common with people with complex trauma, right? You can kind of see it. I can kind of see it even with certain family members, some things that I've done, right? Like back when I was in active addiction, there's if I don't answer my phone, for an example here, if I don't answer my phone when my brother calls me, he'll call me like 3 times in a row because he's still conditioned to think that I'm dead somewhere, you know what I mean? And it elevates him to a certain level, and it's this intrinsic drama, and he'll start elevating his voice and he'll start yelling at me, and I gotta go, hey man, I've cleaned my side of the street, right? And I was like, I'm gonna need you to accept that and come to terms with it however you need to come to terms with it, but the person that you're worried about is not the person you're talking to today. And it's worked a little bit, but then I still get those days where all of a sudden, hey, ring ring ring, ring ring ring, and I'm like, oh, this motherfucker's gonna call me again, isn't he? and then after sitting here listening to you kind of talk about this, it makes sense, man. It's that unhealthy familiarity, as I like to kind of understand it, right? Like, it's, this is familiar to me, kind of like me and my anxiety disorder, right? Like, I know that I'm afraid of elevators, or I know that if I don't get sleep I'm going to be squirrely, or I know this about myself, and even though I hate it, it's a part of my treasures, right? My unhealthy treasures that nobody can have. Yeah, I really appreciate you bringing that stuff up about the trauma, dude, because I think a lot of people don't like to really talk about it. And then I also don't think a lot of people know how to navigate it healthily. You know what I mean? And what you did was really admirable by actually just surrendering to it. Like, hey, sometimes, dude, waving that white flag and just saying, hey, I have been in my own mind creating this shitstorm for however long I have. I'm sorry. And how can I change this? And just being vulnerable to it, man. And that goes for every facet, trauma or otherwise. And that's just my opinion on it, man. So yeah, hats off to you. And that, I love that story.
Thanks. It's I love what you're saying about that familiarity, right? Cause I mean, the same thing, right? You get to decide who do I choose to be in this environment?
Yeah. And that's something else that you mentioned. And I had to be in anger management for a long time, court ordered because of choices I made, we'll say. And, but my teacher was incredible, and I loved her so much, and I learned so much from her. And one of the things that she said is, you don't control another human being, period. What I control ends right here at my fingertips. And kind of what you were alluding to is, people can act any kind of way they want. And her big thing was, you get to choose who you want to allow in your space. And if they're acting some kind of way that you don't like, move your space, move them out of your space, or move your space if they won't move. And you get to, and this is like the triangle of the cycle that you're talking about. Like, if you're being a victim, you're allowing yourself to stay in the triangle, but right, by moving your space and saying, I control me, I control what I allow and how I allow people to treat me. And if you're trying to treat me a way that I don't agree with, then I get to choose to remove you from my space, or move my space so you're not in it. Because it's not like physically removed, because then we're getting into another world of problems. But it's like,
it's all adding up. Jeff's over here nodding, going, ah, this motherfucker.
Get out of my space, motherfucker.
I see you.
But yeah, long way of saying, yeah, we control ourselves, and that's it. And I love what you said about evaluate yourself in a vacuum. I've thought of this concept, but I've never heard it explained so succinctly. And it's kind of a lot of the stuff we talk about, which is just like, who do I want to be? Whether they did something to instigate this person that I don't want to be or not, I don't want to be this person. So, you know, that comes back to what I'm saying. If they bring this person out of me that I don't want to be, then this, I don't need to be around this person. Right. And evaluating yourself in the vacuum is just awesome, because it's like, whether they did or didn't, I don't like the way I reacted and the person I became. So what do I need to do to make sure I don't stay in that and become that person? Right.
Right. Yeah, it really, and that's a level of ownership, right? It's, it's a total level of ownership. It's, I think that's what most of this is all about anyway, right? Owning who we are today and releasing parts of it that we don't want. And we basically become a new identity, right? It's, I mean, it's a little bit deeper than that, but that's what steps work us through. You know, the 12 step programs that are prolific through all kinds of different things, you know, they're in churches and it's being used in so many different, you know, modes. There's relationship ones. There's, you know, of course, the ones for alcohols where, you know, alcoholism, where it started, but, you know, there's all these different programs now for relationships, for codependency, for, you know, we can just go on for days. And matter of fact, a resource in a book I do is a list of a bunch of them, and it's like 2 pages long, and I don't even have all the resources there. There's more, you know.
Yeah.
But it's
a living program.
Yeah, and that's
one of the things we preach here. Is it's not just, it doesn't matter what your addiction or affliction is. It's just for becoming the best version of yourself.
Yeah, and it's a reprogramming tool that gives us a new identity.
Exactly.
We come in obsessed with something, and that's so much part of our makeup and our identity and who we are. And we go through this process, and then we look back and go, hey, I don't have that problem anymore. I'm like a totally new person. What happened? And some of us go into, then we have all these new experiences happening, and we stay attached to the old stuff by going, oh man, if they only knew who I really am or who I really was. It's like, no, you're not that anymore. If they only knew, if you only knew who you are today and how they really see you, like if someone could have helped, it repeated that to me over and over when I started doing that whole, oh, if they only knew who I am or who I was, they wouldn't invite me into this and I wouldn't be able to do that. Uh-huh. And it's like, if someone could have just repeated to me over and over and over, you know, like, hey, do you know who you are today? Look at how they see you today.
Amen to that.
Being invited. Because,
where are your feet?
Right. You know, it's like, wow. But,
you know, I think that's fantastic, man. And sometimes to bring it back to alcoholism and recovery, you know, sometimes I can think about myself as how I once was. You know what I mean? Like they don't even know who I am. Like if I come to like a house party or something like that and like there's purses or wallets laying around, be like, oh, bro, like I can't believe that I'm allowed in this room and no one's around here with these purses unsupervised. Or like or it's like a big open bar, right? Like say it's a house of drinks, be like, oh, you people are wild leaving all this stuff out with old cam cakes here, dude. I'd be tearing this up. You don't know who I am, right? Like, so, but then you see it through the lens, right? You see it through the lens of how I'm perceived now, and how I'm perceived now is a trustworthy, honest person who they have no idea who that is unless they were privy to it before I got sober. I think another thing I kind of want to touch back on in your trauma work, did you do an extensive work on setting boundaries? Because it seems like that triangle type deal would kind of be on, you know, setting boundaries so that you don't have those initial responses. I know Henry's very, very excited about boundaries. He's our boundaries guy here. He's Mr. Boundaries, man. That's why you could hear his prolific speech about moving your space and all those things. So we preach healthy boundaries. Did you have to cut some people off in your recovery journey from overcoming some of that stuff?
I'm gonna tell you, the people I've cut off came from two reasons, and some of them were my own weakness.
Okay.
I go, most of it was my own weakness. I wasn't seasoned enough or good or I don't want to say good enough, because that has such a triggering effect to it, right? I wasn't practiced enough,
There you go.
To be able to hold the boundaries where I wanted them. Mm-hmm. And I talk in places where I will say pretty things that people think are really absurd about boundaries.
Ooh.
Yeah. You want to go on?
Don't tease us like that, Jeff. Come on.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So I'll say things like, over 90% of all boundaries we have to set are bullshit.
Mm, I like that.
And it's making other people our problem. If I have to set a boundary with you, you're my problem.
I see.
And people like go, rah! They're like a cat that rappelled off of something. They're like, rah! I have to set boundaries. So I've softened that a little bit.
The theory, so if I'm understanding, it's like, if I have to do so much work in setting boundaries with this person, the problem might be that this person is in my life at all, or that, like, this is an unhealthy person. If I have to work so hard to set so many boundaries, like, maybe the problem is that they are in my space at all. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's one way to go. The other way is, I'm trying to deflect and make someone else my problem instead of looking at the real thing. Okay. So absolutely. But see, if I make a decision that I don't want to associate with this person anymore for these reasons, that's me holding a boundary. I don't have to tell anyone about it. As a matter of fact, there's an appropriate way of distancing myself from someone where I can be nice about it and not be their enemy. And appreciate who they are and their values, right? Because they just might have different values or something else. And clearly there's some people I just am like, no, I'm done. I'm not going to do it. So everything you said is right. None of these things are ever arguments, right? But here's what we miss. When I'm setting a boundary, again, not all the time, over 90% of the time, especially in the recovery circles, when people are setting boundaries, they're not acknowledging that they already have a boundary. It's just not where they want it to be. And that's someone else's problem for not honoring it. And the truth is, I'm holding a boundary way back here that's uncomfortable for me and miserable and makes my skin crawl or whatever my problems are. Makes me want to rage, makes me want to, whatever it is, right? I just get, And the truth is, I want the boundary here. But I'm only holding it way back here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So how much different is it to say, look, I don't have the ability. I'm weak. Right? Instead of, I'm strong and you better back up. You know, that's boundary setting in our world, right? So instead, hey, this is hurting me right now because I'm not good enough to hold it here. And I'd love to practice holding it here.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this, this, and this, I'm just going to leave. And if I don't leave, could you help me remember to leave? Like, and if somebody doesn't want to react like that, where you're not making them your problem, then, like, for me, if someone's not going to play and they want to keep the game going, then okay, I know who they are and I can buzz. But even asking for help is a trusted thing, right? That's like giving someone my gold. So if you're going to share with someone something like that, then ask them for help. Trust them, because you're giving them something so valuable about yourself, because you're giving them a window into who you are on a deeper place that is fragile and emotional, right? So, but the truth is, I got a boundary way back here that I wish it were way out here, and I'd rather have you fix that for me by appreciating that it's way out here. But when you don't, I'm going to let it come here and here and here, and I'm going to stew and I'm going to fret and I'm going to talk to people and I'm going to try and get help. And I'm going to finally, when it's back here where the real boundary is that I'm holding, I'm now going to lash out at you and be upset about it because I asked you about this already once.
Yeah.
And we're missing the opportunity to practice. Maybe our intuition, maybe the universe is talking to us to say, let's get better at this. So we ask this question, what can I learn from all this emotion I'm having, that should I learn it? I don't ever have to experience it again.
Yeah.
And I can hold the boundary out here, right? But it's holding a boundary, not setting it. You know, it's because you don't have to say anything to hold a boundary. You can just walk away.
That makes sense too about what you're saying. We have the boundary, but it's way back here. It makes a lot of sense in the way I treat it now, which is I try to have the discussion before I'm really pissed off about it. When I feel a resentment building, I mean, Cameron and I, we just had it the other day. If I can feel any kind of like, this motherfucker's pissing me off, then I'm going to have the conversation, because that's my effort of moving and keeping that boundary out where it is, instead of letting it get back, is like, let's nip it in the bud. And hey, I'm not mad, but I would appreciate if you would XYZ, because I can feel it bothering me a little. And if it continues the way it's going, then it's going to become a bigger problem.
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's having a viable conversation. That is holding a boundary, speaking about it way before it's, so you've, even if it's not where you want it yet, you've moved it so far. Mm-hmm. You're now holding a boundary at a discussion, right? Eventually your energy, eventually you'll learn that your energy will just not have those things happen anymore, because you won't attract it.
Yeah. Well, hey, since this is a recovery show, Jeff, and we've talked about all things recovery, when did you get sober, brother? And what was your drug of choice, if you don't mind sharing?
Alcohol was really the thing for me. Nice. I did a lot of other things. I started drinking at a super young age. I had about a 14 year drinking career, and I quit when I was 20.
Nice.
So, and I quit in Okinawa as a Marine.
That must have been interesting.
And kind of hard, I imagine. Those Marines like to party.
Right.
I was in the center of it all, right? And I just finally, I had gotten in some trouble a few months before, and I was waiting on things. And my answer to that was just to drink more. Like a lot of people get in trouble and they're like, I'm never going to drink again. Like for me, it was like, I'm just going to go eat. I'm going to go more and more and more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was able to stop. And, you know, the military, I got some help in the military. They, you know, they sent me to a class learning how to drink responsibly.
Nice.
Where you go to the bar and you observe people drinking and all these things. And so they put me through some classes and some other things. But I have been able to, I say that I'm in long-term recovery. So since 1986,
man,
I have not had to do any alcohol or drugs of any kind. And, and my love of everything was alcohol. Other things were great too, but my true love was alcohol.
You're preaching to the choir here with these two.
Here we are, brother. Hey, we're not so different, you and I. I lasted about 14, 15 years before the wheels started falling off on me too, and it was wild.
And you got sober the year before we were born.
Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah.
And you look great, I must say.
You look good, brother.
I love life. Mm-hmm. Like, we really get to live a joyful life, and who knew, right? I mean, I get to take care of myself today differently than I ever have. And yeah, you know, I listened to one of your podcasts, and I listened to a couple of them, but one of them where they said, if someone knows, can tell me anything about the 50s, and that was singing my song, right?
Oh, was that Jesse?
Jesse, yeah.
That they shouldn't be running the world, the free world.
Oh yeah. Well yeah, then
oh, no, that was Cassidy. Out,
but
yeah.
She was out of Pennsylvania, I think. And I was just like, man, I love that, right? Because I have this thing about how, you know, there's a reason we have Sun Cities today.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And some of it's shame, right? Some of it's they don't want to hang out with young people that are now putting it in their face that everything they were teaching was wrong.
Yeah.
And it wasn't intentional, but still, you know, like, but for the first time, things have changed so fast, right? It used to be that things would change over such a long period of time. It took generations for things to be different. Now things have changed so fast in the last 100 years that it's like it's up, man. Everybody knows, like, hey, this is all wrong. And then put it on top of how we're shifting into a new galaxy and all these other things that people will talk about. And I just share something with you that I think is really fun?
Sure.
Absolutely.
I love talking about spirituality. I love talking about all these different ethereal things, and it's great. But the way I don't talk about it, the way that I help it become something that is just acceptable, is that the unconscious mind has the ability to store anything anywhere. Mm-hmm. So if somebody shows up and they're talking about past lives, who cares? No one needs to argue about it. If they're talking about biblical stuff, if they're talking about other religions, if they're talking about anything, man, because the unconscious mind can figure out how to store stuff anywhere, and our conscious mind can only handle so much. So if we can figure it out, it's probably not right anyway.
Yeah.
If it makes too much sense, it's either really a small thing. If it makes too much sense, or we really don't have it figured out, you know?
One of the most interesting things that I noticed being in the AA rooms, because in AA, there's a lot more time than NA. There's a lot of younger people in NA. There's a lot more clean time and stuff in AA. But one of the things I noticed, I've never met a person that has 20 plus years clean that isn't doing pretty great, that isn't having a good time, has a good life. And like you, for the listener, you look at least 15 years younger than I'm assuming by math and stuff that you are. Like, you look incredible. Yeah. And healthy. Yeah. vitality. Like, I've never seen somebody with 20 plus years clean from alcohol that isn't having a pretty good time. And that's like all the evidence you need right there. Like, this stuff kills us. It ages us. It, you know, and I don't want to proselytize, but I'm just saying, all the people that I've seen with that kind of clean time, you know what I'm talking about, Cameron? Like, they look incredible and they're doing pretty well in life.
Yeah, man. And that's one of the sales pitches, right? Like, attraction rather than promotion. Attraction, yeah. Right. Like you sit here and you look at Jeff and you go, damn, yeah, your skin's glowing, brother. Look at us. It's like a stroke party for you, Jeff. So I hope you walk off when we kick you out of here and you just go, man, dude, these young cats that weren't even born when I got sober told me my skin's glowing. It's a good day. But that is a good day, brother. But it's true, right? Because you see the polar opposite of what you're saying, Henry, the people who live that hard and fast life, right? Like, I saw somebody, or I know somebody who's like 60 who looks like she's fucking like 85, right? Yeah. And that's just that hard life. And it's just like, man, that's a hard 60. That's a hard 60. And then you sit there and you see guys like Jeff, right? And you're like, hey, I want that, man. Like, this guy's talking to me about boundaries, living a healthy life. Skin's glowing like Henry's lips in the morning when he puts it on fucking Aquaphor and he sends me pictures. I mean, all kinds of fun shit, dude.
You wear clear lipstick too?
Oh, yeah. Dude, my fiance taught me that you can use Aquaphor on your lips because I have it for tattoos. It's the best thing for fresh tattoos. She's like, you can put that on. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me because you put chapstick on and your lips are dry again in like 5 minutes and you just got to keep doing it. Yeah. So every night I lube up, and last night I was taking pictures of my little chihuahua snuggling with me, and I just have these shiny ass lips. I sent Cameron a picture, dude.
You could literally see the reflection of the phone, like it was looking in a mirror. Those things were so gloss, dude.
You'll have less laugh lines when you get older. Freaking awesome.
So one thing I want to touch on, because you did mention discipline, and it's something that I personally struggle with. And it's an interesting conversation because it's like, some people say, well, you're born with it or you aren't, but I think it definitely is a learned skill, but it's very difficult to learn. So do you have any tips or tricks or hacks, or how did you find and how do you maintain discipline?
You know, it's interesting. There's so many strategies and tactics that you can take with it, right? And the number one thing I think that you can do is, I almost want to say, drop the idea for a minute, right? And just think about what you want. Sometimes it's not discipline as much as it's motivation, right? And sometimes it's like, what if it were easy, right? The fact that we talk about needing discipline kind of presupposes that we don't have any. So changing our language to be, and one of the things I've noticed, a really good exercise to do is just ask people around you what they want. What do you want out of a relationship? Or what do you want, just what do you want in general out of life? And think about how many people that you ask that to answer it by, well, I know what I don't want. Like, well, what kind of job do you want? Well, I don't want to dig ditches and I don't want to do this and I don't want to do that. Okay, great. What do you want? Right. So there's this
motivational idea of interviewing.
Right. So there's this idea of being, it's funny, that brought up like 10 memories of motivational interviewing. But
well, we had Paul on, and he was this guy, Paul, that, you know, change made easy. And this is, you guys are on kind of the same wavelength with this kind of thing. It's interesting.
None of this is new information. It's funny. Yeah. I was talking to someone about that today at this client and that I'm engaged in and doing, you know, we're doing amazing things. And they want to bring in a new model of training something. And I'm like, look, let's not bring in a new model of training. Let's take what we need from it and own it. If you think about the great names out there, whether it's Tony Robbins or Ken Blanchard whoever, right? You just start throwing names out. It's not okay to take their branded materials and call it your own, right? But they, like me, I tell things. I don't want you to say, well, Jeff says do this. Jeff says do that. Jeff would do this. The whole idea is to learn it for ourselves, own it inside. So
we stand on the shoulders of giants.
Right, you know, and so I he and I are reading the same books, listening to the same things, and like you are, right? A saying that came over me on that was, instead of following in someone's footsteps, if you want what they have, stop doing what they did and seek what they sought.
Mm. I like that a lot.
Mm.
I like that a lot.
And you'll do it your own.
All your little quotes, they make me think about them. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's your path. It's your path. Right. You're not just following that same mold.
Yeah. You can't put stuff in the rearview mirror if you don't own it.
I love it. I love that, right. Dude. That's good.
So as far as discipline, right? I almost throw it away and say, what do you want? And I'd create the most amazing picture of what that is. You got any ideas of what you want discipline for?
Just like for me, it's just to complete the most basic household and adult tasks.
Perfect. So name.
Household projects, like fixing this light switch that I got to fix and putting up the light outside and planting my garden beds and stuff like that.
So one way to do this, and if those aren't necessarily repetitive tasks, but though the garden is, you know, one way is, instead of trying to tackle it all, pick the minimal. What's the least thing that if I do, I can say I've achieved today?
I definitely do that.
Yeah.
So the next question would be, what if you just valued doing it? What if you shifted that value into completion?
How'd we get here again, Cameron?
You asked.
Yeah, I know. Put myself on the hot seat.
Well, in that, if you just value completion, and then what if you still valued the sanity and not wanting to lose it? Who would you get help from? What are the strategies you could use to still get it done if you really value getting it done in a certain time frame? And so if you brought the same value and making it easy on yourself. Yeah. If it's money, if it's a money problem, could you work 2 hours somewhere, do a side job, and then pay someone to do it? Something you love doing, right? Like if you love gardening, maybe you don't, you could go garden for someone and then that money pays for the light switch. Or like you start opening your mind to the possibilities of what could happen when you start valuing something different. I started my podcast that way.
Yeah.
For years, I didn't want to talk. I wanted to talk. But I was too, that's a lot to unpack. But when I started valuing just starting, I started, and then I had a new baseline to grow from.
Right. Well, I see what you're saying there, Jeff, though. So it's like that you can mold it into discipline by, it's almost like disciplining yourself to solve the problem in another way. If you're not valuing it in this fashion, if I'm mistaken, correct me, but yeah, that's a good way to look at it, right? Like, hey, I have to get this done. So I have to figure it out one way or another, and something's going to either benefit or something's going to be lost in that whole exchange. So it's either I get it done and that's off my plate, or I don't get it done, and then now I'm irritated and yada, 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 yada. So, yeah, dude, I think that's fantastic. I like that a lot.
It might be worth, too, digging in a little bit to how much you judge yourself. You know, like I have to think about, it's good for us to think about, you know, do I think I should do this? And am I putting myself through this because I'm shooting myself?
Mm-hmm. I'm the harshest critic in the world, man. Yeah, it's like I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And then we had this guy Paul on 2 weeks ago who absolutely roasted Henry for not fixing his truck lock that was broken and all his tools were sitting in there for months on end, and told him that you shouldn't do anything, right? I'm not going to be able to say it as eloquent as he did.
If you should, then you would have done it, but you didn't do it, so you shouldn't have.
Yeah, he absolutely smoked him. Henry almost cut the part out of the episode. He was so ashamed.
it was good stuff. And I thought about it afterwards and I was like, it makes sense. But the other thing he said, and I think it's what you're saying, is there is no grade. No one else is coming to say, hey, you got a C- in production today. This is me and the things that I put on myself. And we'll leave this with another quote from my anger management teacher, Claudia Diaz, rest in peace. Incredible woman. She said, if someone else talked to you the way that you talk to you, you would punch him in the face.
Right.
And I don't know if she came up with it, but she told it to me. So she came up with it. And I love that. You know, go easier on yourself. If you should do it, then you would have, but you didn't. So you shouldn't. I got one thing I want to touch on before we get out of here. We got to get to wrapping it up. But I did notice in some of your shows, and this is something I've been trying to work on. My dad is like a scarcity mindset type of person. And like his mom grew up in the Great Depression. So they did have to save, you know, she lived in a chicken coop. They had to save cans, and she was take care of your pennies and your dollars would take care of themselves, which is actually a good thing that I still use. But anyway, this idea of scarcity, which it's like, there won't be enough. We won't be able to get it. It'll never be here again. And then shifting your perspective to abundance. The world is abundant. And if this doesn't work out, I can get it somewhere else, so on and so forth. I was wondering if you could just touch on that a little bit and your ideas about that and how you try to approach it, I guess.
That's cool. I think that's a constant work in progress. Like everything really. Right. But you know, all these constructs we live by, right. All these frameworks, you know, there's people that come here from other countries that were highly oppressed or in complete poverty that become highly successful, right?
Yep.
And they thrive. I'm thinking about a guy right now that wrote a little book he hands out about it. And it's like, how does that happen? Because we do have a lot of people.
Because we're over here playing victim, complaining about stuff, and they're right. Taking action.
Right. Like, oh, well, I was raised and I was this. It's like, so why do some people turn that? It's just a consideration, right? Some people turn that into, and they get the reverse. Other people turn that and they become hoarders. Other people turn that. So you start looking at what are all the options of things that people do with that information? And then what do I want to do with it? So if it's true that what we focus on is what grows, which I have tried to prove it to be right or wrong, right? And I've found it to be true. If we focus on what we agree with instead of what we don't agree with, we'll get more. I don't know if I can say this on here or not, but think about people talking about dating apps and getting dick pics. We're a bunch of guys, so we can't say or whatever.
You can. This is a safe place.
You have a woman say, "Don't send me dick pics." I'm like, okay, like I wasn't going to, but all right, you know.
Should I now, or is that, are you asking?
Right.
Do you want one? I got a couple saved. But
if that's what someone focuses on, that's what they're going to get. They're going to get more of that. If they ignore them, delete them. If when they see something like that, it's off their radar and they're not affected and it's gone. Now we go back to boundaries. That's holding a boundary. So I've talked to some women that have practiced that and they don't get them,
yeah,
because they quit engaging with it.
Okay.
And all of a sudden over time, it's like, man, I just don't even see that anymore. So it's like, okay, so that's the boundary they're holding. Now they're not seeing as much of it. So that's just one crude example of how that might work. Right. But I've experimented with this with other friends doing other things as well. And myself. And it's like, so if it's true that what we focus on grows, if I focus on scarcity, what's going to grow? All right. If I focus on flow and abundance and what does work, like what did make money? What did create more resources for me? And this isn't money. This is abundant emotionally. how many emotions do we have? If you want to talk about an abundant flow of emotions, do I want an abundant flow of emotions that make me less resourceful? And I think about all the pain and the trauma and I try and relive this stuff. And I think of all these things that happen and I become less resourceful. Yeah. And, or if I want to think on good things, then I become more resourceful. So I can be abundant in emotions that make me more resourceful. And then emotions that tend to make us less resourceful have less impact. Yeah. And we can let them flow through. And there's a lot of belief systems attached to this stuff. But, and I think that's the number one thing, is just choose what we want. Am I more motivated by what I don't want, or am I more motivated by what I want? If I'm more motivated by what I don't want, I'm thinking more about what I don't want, and I'm going to continue to get more of what I don't want. And it's going to be this constant grind of trying to get away from something that I keep focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep carrying it around with a bag behind me, and which is a lot like if they only knew who I was, right? And, you know, like I'm just carrying this bag of shit with me because that's who I am. And it's like when we,
it's like, I don't want this dog following me, but you're holding the leash.
Right. And so that's a good start one. Developing the pictures and the ideas of what you do want.
Yeah.
Go as far out as you can. The highest overarching goal you can imagine, put as much picture to that, put as much reality to that as you can, and really, and imagine yourself living in it. What kind of problems would I have there? What kind of joys would I have there? Where would I eat? What would I do? Like with, you know, maybe the goal is to have a boat, you know, what lake would I be on? Or would it be the ocean? You know, put as much as you can on it and see what starts to happen. But it's kind of like the drama triangle. The best thing to do is to not focus on it, but you don't have to try and change, or you're not talking about trying to change them in their mindset, right?
No, I'm talking about, I like to operate of a place of like believing that the world is abundant. That's the work that I try to do, because I was raised by someone who kind of has a scarcity mentality. The funny thing is, my instinct, my lizard brain says that's foo-foo, weird, goofy, silly, magical. But the reality is that the most successful people all talk about doing that. Visualization, picturing themselves there, writing. I heard this guy did it on his podcast. He said, we sit around a beautiful oak table. We have floor to ceiling windows. And he wrote this whole, the entire thing exactly the way he wants to see it out. And it's just like, you can think it's silly or whatever else, like I do, maybe I'm alone in that. The most successful people talk about it. And even, you know, for an example, like Gary Vee, and I'm not a huge follower of his, but I see some of his stuff and he's like, I don't even know who my competition is. I don't care. I'm doing fine, no matter what they're doing. There's plenty for all of us. And I mean, we know the government just prints more money all the time. If it's money you're worried about, there's plenty out there to be had. And someone else succeeding does not preclude me from succeeding. Right. The hater mentality of like, oh, fuck, why are they? Oh, I'm glad they're winning. I hope to be winning the way they're winning someday. And man, I'm happy to see them happy. Like, that's the kind of attitude that I try to, I don't know, that's kind of what I was trying to get at with that.
I was the same way, man. I didn't want to think about, I had a friend that was dreaming about a motor coach. And I remember he was grieving the loss of the dream when he got the motor coach.
Mm.
Because it was like, man, what's going to drive me now? That drove me for like 2 years getting to where I could just pay cash for this thing and drive it around. He wanted a tour bus, right? That's what he wanted. And it was like, that's what he needed. That's what he wanted. He was, and oh my God. And then he was like all messed up for a long time trying to replace that vision. Right. So I don't love
the set a new goal.
Well, and I don't love the idea. I think that's too short term. Right. I don't love the idea of those. I don't have a problem with the physical goal, but that's not the point. That's just what seems to get people's attention talking. Like get a Ferrari, but if that doesn't turn you on, don't make that it, right? That's why I said, think about the problems you'll have.
Yeah.
When you have what you really want, right? What kind of impact do you want to make on the world?
There's something to your buddy who set this goal for, he wanted the stagecoach, right? And then when he got it ready, it satiated him for a minimal amount of time, I imagine. And it goes to show that no material item can satisfy us. So you know, people will get interviewed at the absolute top of the top. And I've mentioned it on this podcast. I think it was like a Oxford mathematician named John Lennox. He talks about it. He was talking with a tennis star who reached the top and had all the money and had won it all. And when they interviewed him, they asked him, "Hey, you made it to the top. How do you feel?" And the guy looked at him and answered, and he goes, "I got to the top and I found out there's nothing there. There's nothing there. It's this never ending journey." So the things that you're saying, ready? Hey, I should be shooting for the best possible version of me. What's healing me interiorly and in my heart, and what's putting me actually at peace, instead of shooting and aiming for these piles of fucking junk that are going to turn and rust and turn to dust one day, that mean absolutely fucking nothing. It's all about sustaining, building, loving, healthy relationships. That's my opinion. That's my goal in my life. Yes, I like shiny things. Yes, I like money, yada, yada, yada. But it is not the sole purpose of my existence at this stage in my life. But we've kept you long enough. We asked two questions to every one of our guests, and I'm going to hit you with this one right now. What would you tell somebody who is struggling with substance abuse right now, Jeff?
And you're not alone.
Okay.
You're not alone. And yep. And you really don't ever have to do this anymore.
Amen to that.
If you don't want to do this, you don't have to do this anymore. And it's okay.
You're not alone. And that's kind of the point of this podcast. You know, if you're listening to this, you know that you've at least got the three of us. At minimum, and you know how to find us. We answer DMs and all that. So yeah. Message us. And the next question is, what's your favorite part about recovery?
I get to be who I choose. It's ultimately the freedom, you know?
Freedom.
I get to believe what I want, and I get to do like all those things, which I guess I always could have done, right? But I finally was able to give myself permission.
Exactly. I don't think we see it. We don't have that freedom when we're trapped in being what we think other people want and trying to put on this persona of this person that we're not and trying to impress people and whatever other kind of things that we're doing before we get this clarity and this freedom.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, your podcast is The Point with Jeff Spikes. Can they find that on every platform? Do you want to plug your show real quick?
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube or Apple or any of them, all of them. They're out there. Got a little over a year worth of episodes being consistent. You know, there's also, you can find me on bit.ly/M, you know, with Jeff Spikes, and there's links to other stuff, but you can find it all through the podcast. And, you know, I started the podcast because I wanted to exercise my voice, and it helped regulate my content and what I was going through. And it was important for me. It helped me in a lot of ways. It was something that could be leveraged. I was also demonstrating something to people I work with, right? The idea of just starting and creating a new baseline, even don't worry about perfection, just start it. And then you have a new baseline to grow from. And if we're constantly developing new baselines and we're getting a little bit better all the time, you know, so it's like, man, just start, man. If you got it in your heart and you got it, start.
That's exactly how we started this show.
It works, right? And it's an example. It's all it is. It's and it's a hum. It's like, hey, yeah, I screwed up. I've had people throw some really funny comments my way, and I love them. There is no failure. There's only feedback.
Yep.
So take the feedback. But yeah, that's find me on jeffspikes.com and DM, hit me up, whatever. I'll answer, and we'll you want to talk recovery? I'll talk recovery anytime.
We will get your links in the show notes, and we'll definitely have to have you back, man, because this was a blast, and we took some unexpected turns that I didn't think we were going to have that were beautiful, and I really enjoyed this, man. I really appreciate you coming on.
I did, too. I love what you guys are doing, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. The gal that I saw in that one podcast, it was such a beautiful experience, and just I'm grateful you guys would have me, and thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. That was awesome, man. I'm glad you had a good time. And like Henry said, dude, we'll have to have you back. So we wish you the best of luck in all your endeavors, brother. And you're a vibrant soul. Don't let that anger come back and get you, brother.
Right on, my man. I appreciate
Keep
it.
Keep that glow.
Yeah, you're looking fantastic. Later, Jeff.
Later, thanks, man.
Later.
See ya.
What a cool guy.
It's so funny too, because this was a blind date, right? We hadn't talked to Jeff before. We actually got contacted through his, assistant, yeah. Which I'm like, fuck, I would like to have an assistant. I got DMs on my Facebook, Rude Dude Facebook, Rude Dude Instagram, Threads, freaking everything. I'm like, God, I need me an assistant.
That was a really cool conversation, man. And like you said, it just unfolded organically. He had a lot of very insightful things to say. I appreciated lots of nuggets, man. And I appreciated how lucid and transparent he was. He scratched my brain with the way that he said things, right? Like the way that he would break things down was a different way of saying it. And I really appreciated that about him. It made me think, and then overall agree with 99% of the stuff that he said, to be honest.
Well, and if you guys heard some deafening silence when he dropped those quotes on us, it's because I had to think about them. I really had to think about what they meant. Like the, if I wasn't wrong, then you don't need to prove, if I wasn't right, then you don't need to prove me wrong. It's a very interesting one.
Yeah, we got to see it on video when Henry's deep in thought. It's quite a look, man. He's sitting there like this, and he's zoning on. But it was
all two brain cells just, yeah, just
bing bong bing, saying things, not computing. No, I had a few moments like that too. It's because we're wet brains, bro.
All right, man. What do you got for the quote Kreeran?
The quote Kreeran. Did I do it again?
Yes, you did.
Dude, that's fantastic. This week's Kreeran's quote is as follows. Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. It's a relationship between equals. Only when we know our own darkness well can we be present with the darkness of others. Compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. Pema Chodron. I don't know who that is. I probably slaughtered the name, but that's a good one. And it's about our shared humanity, kind of like what we're talking about today on this episode, right? Like we're all kind of one, man, and you never know what everybody else is kind of going through. At least that's kind of what I took away from it a little bit.
Yeah, I like the idea of not being like patronizing, like, oh, you poor little thing, let me take care of you because you're a lesser being that didn't handle this well. It's like, I see you because I've experienced this, and we are both humans on this same journey, and let me help you because I understand your pain.
Exactly. And there's one thing that is unifying for all of us, and that is suffering. Unavoidable, and we all go through it. So if we could all be kinder to each other when we are, in fact, suffering, the world would be a more loving and caring place. What are we having them follow this week? What's on the agenda?
We're reminding them about the support this podcast on Spotify. If you want to help us out, we're working on expanding our social media, and that requires some video editing and all kinds of different stuff. So if you want to support this podcast, go to Spotify, go to About, and there's a link to support this podcast. We also ask that you support our sponsors, which is Podbeats and really cool app. Put music over your podcast so you can listen to podcasts while you work out and still have the vibes on high speed. We also have another sponsor, which you may have heard the commercial in this episode if I got around to it. And that is the Insurance Lab, based out of Fair Oaks, California, a buddy of mine, Joey Hensler. And it is a boutique insurance company with personalized insurance plans where you can get the owner on the phone. You're not just another number. You're not just one of 1 million where you talk to some secretary who has no idea what's going on. You will talk to the owner of the company that will help you get a personalized insurance plan just for you.
And you know what? That's a rarity these days. So please hit him up because we all love some good, solid human communication and not an AI robot. So that's great, man. And yeah, Podbeats is great. Fantastic. I downloaded it. I gave it a spin. After I slaughtered the fact that we have them as a sponsor in the last episode, I just want to reiterate that Podbeats is awesome. It's been fun interacting with them on Threads. They're doing cool stuff. They're really cool supporters. Go download the app.
Yeah, and then also if you are in the Morgantown area, my buddy Austin just did a paint correction and ceramic coating on my truck. And when I tell you, I didn't know my truck was this color. It feels like my truck looks better than it probably did off the showroom floor. It's incredible. It's not just a detail. It's a paint correction. You got rid of all the swirls. And when I tell you this color I've never seen before, it looks incredible. So if you need like scratch, blemish, all that type of stuff fixed like that, details and ceramic coating, which, you know, the raindrops will just run away, reach out to me because I have the guy.
Ah, yes. And I imagine if you go and you have him work on your car, he'll probably talk to you with a very extensive vocabulary. So it should be riveting. The Raptor looks great. Holler at Austin. I think that's all we have this weekend. Anything else before we wrap? Look at us with three people we got to plug at the end of the show.
Look at us. I feel growth, brother. And we got a pretty pretty sharp guest going on. This feels like growth, my man. I love it.
Rude Dude Recovery, dude. If you want to be offended, come listen to us. That's the Podbeats guy said in that ad.
And if you want to stop getting dick pics, stop thinking about them so much.
Exactly. Well, all right, man. I will finish it like I always do. I want to thank Jeff again for coming on. And Hen, I love you very much, my man. Very good to see you today, brother.
I love you too, Cree. And remember, be yourself and fuck what they think.
Podbeats, download it. Later, dude.
Wanted to MC with the music and miracle. I wanted a puppy then boy. The lyric was so right. Oh, no, right. So I sing because I know life goes on. And I know life goes on. What a jacket.
Welcome to the Bellwitch Podcast, a show that covers the infamous legend of the historic Bellwitch haunting in southern United States in the 19th century, where the Bell family experienced frightening happenings within their home. Hang on a second. No, that's the wrong Bellwitch. This is a podcast about being a witchy pagan in the 21st century, airing bi-weekly, with different guests on each month sharing their pearls of wisdom and gems of knowledge from their very own witchy businesses. I call it a moot loot. Here we cover a wide range of pagan and witchcraft related topics, from sigils, spells and spirits to Reiki rituals and pagan parenting while camping in the Bell tent named Delilah. It's got nothing to do with the Bell Witch from the 19th century in Tennessee that scared people to death in a little townhouse, which may or may not be true. Pretty cool story, but yeah, it's the wrong Bellwitch. This Bellwitch podcast is brought to you by Swales, the friendly green witch from Leeds, UK. A northern witch with a strong Yorkshire accent, a love of all things weird, spooky, magical, and a smelly dragon named Dave. So tune in every 2 weeks for a sprinkling of Yorkshire magic. Listen to the Bellwitch podcast with me, Swales, the friendly green witch, wherever you get your podcasts.